Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 3:19 p.m. Central Time. Today is June 30th, and of course it's the end of the quarter. So there's a lot of speculation about what is going to happen in the next quarter. Well, one thing is for sure is that in the first portion of this year, there was a lot of concern about the massive acceleration that we had in lumber prices. That was in direct response to a demand jump as a result of the pandemic. A lot of people wanted to build their own homes, buy new houses. There was a bulge in terms of home construction. Prices accelerated to such an extraordinary extent that it actually cut into demand for new homes because people simply couldn't afford the building costs, so people started delaying projects. And then lumber mills started to ramp up production and prices have come straight back down again. And this decline does not show any signs yet of having ended. So a very short-term pop on the upside and now prices are down $1,000 from the peak. This is a material event in terms of how inflation is perceived, because housing costs are integral to the way that central banks measure inflation. So when lumber prices rise in such a profound manner, then that starts to push up housing prices, the cost of building goes up, and all of that starts to feed through into how inflation is measured, well, then that starts to create inflationary fears. And that's exactly what we had in the first portion of this year. And over the course of the last few weeks, it started to moderate, and not least because lumber prices have started to come back down. But the cost of housing is only a portion of the way that inflation is measured. Then when we start to think about the grains and beans, well, they're not generally included in how inflationary pressures are measured because they're volatile. But soybeans firmed in a very dynamic manner today from the region of the trend mean. And it might be better to look at this on the second month continuation chart. We can clearly see that it's been a really impressive rebound from the region of the trend mean. Prices really haven't gone much of anywhere for the last couple of weeks. But the much bigger picture is that we are right in the region of the peaks from all the way back in 2008 and 2012, and it's looking a lot better supported on this occasion than it was at those particular peaks. So there is the real potential here that we are going to see soybean prices pushing out and into new all-time highs. And if it were just soybeans, well, then I don't think there'd be much of a story. But corn is also pushing up, and it was up in a dynamic manner as well in here today. This looks like a first step above the base. It still has a ways to go to get back to the peaks put in 2011 and 12 and 2008, but it looks like we have clear evidence of support coming through around the 500 cent level. Then wheat has lagged both corn and soybeans, but it also jumped in a pretty dynamic manner in here today. Oats is really one of the most fashionable of the grains right now, but it's also among the clear outperformers, and the price is right in the region of the peak, and it's not an especially liquid commodity, so maybe the first month continuation chart gives us more evidence, but we're also right in the region of the peaks from back in 2008 and 2012. And the reason why we're starting to see additional interest in grains and beans is because farmers are planting fewer of them. And on top of that, there are worries about droughts and yields. And the big takeaway from the pandemic is that we've had a massive shock to the global supply chain for commodities. And when hotels and restaurants stopped buying and consumers started buying more, and there was this big dislocation in the market, and there was a lot of questions about how to get products to consumers, and who were the new consumers going to be? Well, then that upset the rhythm of the agricultural sector. And the upshot from that is there were simply fewer available commodities to stockpile. So now that we have these challenges in the form of droughts and other weather-related events, then there are fewer commodities in stockpile to cushion the blow. So there is certainly potential for additional upside in here. And then we can think about the fact that we are looking at a potential frost in Brazil. So coffee prices were in negative territory today, but the price overall has base formation completion characteristics. When we think about sugar, then it hasn't quite broken out yet, but it does look like it's going to. So we're definitely seeing higher commonality coming through right across the primary food commodity sectors. And as I said, that does not generally translate into inflation in the same way that central banks tend to look at it. But what it does do is it becomes extremely noticeable for consumers. And then consumers go off and ask for more money. And that kicks off wage demand growth. So the knock-on effect of this change is that you might have moderating inflation as a result of lumber prices and accelerating inflation as a result of agricultural prices. And this is potentially just a transition. So there was a lot of fears about inflationary pressures in the first quarter of the year, and they moderated in the second quarter of the year. So now the question is, are they going to re-accelerate in the third quarter of the year? Because energy is a significant portion of everybody's budget, and oil prices continue to push on the upside. Brent crude is holding the $75 area in a pretty admirable manner, and there hasn't been any downside follow-through on the key reversal, small key reversal, that we saw on Monday. So this is still an uptrend overall, and then natural gas prices are also still in the ascendancy and continuing to firm and hold the breakout from what was a well-defined range. Carbon credits are also continuing to strengthen and pushing on to test the peak from May. And this is a secular bull market that is government mandated. So it's often said that you don't fight the Fed. Well, you don't fight the European Commission either. And they certainly want to see higher carbon prices overall. So that is deterring investment in additional new supply for oil, which is making the available supply more valuable, which is pushing up prices for oil. And of course, not least because OPEC is holding 8 million barrels a day off the market. Well, then we can think about how some of the industrial resources are performing. Palladium, having pulled back in a rather dynamic manner 2 weeks ago, has now recouped all of the decline and testing the sequence of lower rally highs, but it's been a pretty emphatic break or bounce from the region of the trend mean. I think the number one point here is that at prices like this in normal circumstances, the automotive sector would have already retooled and they'd be using platinum for catalytic converters. But they don't have an incentive to retool today because they're deploying all of their available cash into developing electric vehicles. So as long as they're producing internal combustion engines, there's going to be a call for palladium, and that's why we continue to see relative strength here. And it has very impressively held support around the $2,500 area, around the upper side of that underlying range and the region of the trend mean. So this looks like a bull trend overall. Platinum's new bull market story is all related to hydrogen and hydrogen fuel cells. So The price is starting to steady now from the region of the trend mean, and this looks like a first step above the base. And I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside as long as platinum is holding that $1,000 level. And then, of course, we have gold. So, gold prices have been coming down since August. And we had a failed move above the $1,900 area at the beginning of this month, and then some steadying today at the end of the quarter. So there's a lot to unpick with why gold has been pulling back. I think when we think about the most important correlations, well, it's not a surprise that, or I guess it's not a coincidence, is probably the more accurate way of saying it, that bond prices peaked in August, and so did gold. So we've had this really quite acute decline in government bond prices, and it's also been rather persistent in gold. Now, bond prices have been going sideways to up over the course of the last 3 months. When we look at an individual contract rather than the continuation chart, well, we can see that there's been a clear upward bias and a quite consistent sequence of higher reaction lows. So bond yields are compressing. And if rising yields had been a headwind for gold, well, one would have to conclude that compressing yields should be a relatively benign outcome for gold. But the yield didn't hold the low in here today, and there is still a lot of discussion about whether bond yields are going to compress further or how much further can they compress. The one thing that I think is particularly relevant is the yield curve spread, and it has pulled back in a pretty dynamic manner, and it is testing the lows right now. So we've had a significant move in the long end of the curve, and this yield curve spread is now right in the region of the trend mean. So if it breaks below the trend mean, then that would break the uptrend, and it would change the outlook for the inflationary environment overall. So we are at, I think, a rather critical juncture in terms of how inflation is perceived in the economy. Because if lumber prices continue to come down and wage demand growth lags, then the continued availability of liquidity is going to put further steam under the growth sector overall. And the Nasdaq continues to hold its move upwards. It was at a new high today, but the Dow Jones did better and was in positive territory by a couple of hundred points for the simple reason that bond yields came off their lows. So we have this, it's almost like a day-to-day transition between favoring growth or value. And every single time that bond yields compress, it favors tech. And when they rise, it favors value. Now, because that yield curve spread has been trending, then we've also continued to see this trend in favoring growth over value for the last 3 months. Now, if we look at the ratio between the two and just pick this up and look at it on a weekly basis, then we can clearly see that there was a clear trend higher from about November of last year, and then it broke that sequence of higher reaction lows. But that move started in May and it continues today, and that pretty much coincides with the peak in the yield curve spread. Now, the last time that we had a meaningful peak in the yield curve spread following an inversion, and it did not get all the way back up towards the peaks, was in that period from 1995 through to 1999. We got into a negative yield, excuse me, an inverted yield curve situation in 1998 in the The spread popped on the upside, but then it didn't go anywhere, and it became inverted sharply again at the end of 1999, and that was the end of the bull market. Well, we did have an inverted condition, and then we saw that the yield expanded in a or the spread expanded in a very profound manner all the way through until April of this year. I was really getting quite worried about the outlook for growth in the first quarter because of that rising yield curve spread, and we had a significant wobble in the Nasdaq in the first quarter of this year, and now it is pushing on to new high ground because that yield curve spread is compressing once more. It is holding out the prospect that we are going to have a true bubble, and that there is going to be significant additional upside over the course of the next few years, and until at least as long as it takes the Federal Reserve to, in fact, normalize and then tighten policy. We still have extremely accommodative financial conditions. So, the Bloomberg Financial Conditions Index is right in the region of its peaks and still trending higher. We have a deficit condition internationally, which is still in the order of about 2 trillion. So, this is something that is not going to get better anytime soon. We have central bank balance sheets that continue to expand, and the pace of the expansion might not be as quick as it was in the first quarter of last year, but it is certainly still trending higher. And up now to 31.5 trillion. I think the most important point is that when we look at money supply growth on a month-over-month basis, it's running at about 16%. And the most, I think, are the most important point is that this range that has persisted for the last 8 months is at a higher overall value than the peak money growth rates over the last 30 years. So we did have spikes during recessions where there was a necessity to increase money supply growth, and then it came straight back down again. So it was like a one-hit wonder. But in order to get anywhere close to the kind of money supply growth that we had, that we have now, we have to go all the way back into the 1970s. And it was in the early 1970s where we had money supply growth, and that it ranged between about 9.5 and 17 or 18%. And it did that for years. And we had a recession in 1974, so it popped on the upside and then it stayed high again for years. So it wasn't really until the end of the 1970s that we started to see this money supply growth coming back down again. And in all that time, we had a decade of inflation. And of course, there were lots of exogenous factors that contributed to that inflation. But perhaps the most important were the price controls that were introduced because inflation kicked off in the early 1970s. The removal of those price controls then created massive price pressures. Then we had the energy crisis because of the oil embargoes, and subsequently then inflation took off with wages. So it was a whole range of different factors that contributed to it, but perhaps the thing that was the ignition switch for the inflationary trend was money supply growth. So we can definitely see that at the end of the 1960s, money supply growth went negative and subsequently went up a lot. So money supply growth got down to almost zero at the end of 2018. And since then, it's been trending higher. So it's very easy to just simply look at that figure that we had in 2020 and think, well, that was extraordinary and there's nothing that's ever going to be like that again. But this is a clear trend, and the trend has been going on for over 2 years. And we haven't seen any evidence yet that this trend of money supply growth has stopped. And something growing at 16% on a month-over-month basis is really quite exceptional. So when we start to think about why have assets been so strong? Why have stock markets been able to hold up so well? Well, that is the reason why. Now, it doesn't mean that they're going to hold up indefinitely. And certainly when we look at something like the S&P 500, it has been extremely inert over the course of the last couple of weeks. And the VIX index, having briefly popped on the upside in here today, closed towards the lower side of the daily range. And it's down around the 15 level. So that is the lowest, or close to at least the lowest levels that we've seen since before the pandemic. And there is still a downward trend overall. And the spikes on the upside have become progressively less powerful and last less time. So this is supportive of the view that we're still in a bull market environment overall. It does not completely obviate the potential that we're going to have a somewhat deeper correction, or that the lull in the summer might deliver a bit of a shock and some stress. But as long as money supply growth is coming in at 16% a month, and as long as the trends are holding their respective trend means, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And the USA is attracting considerable additional interest because the dollar has been strengthening. And the dollar index was up again in here today and briefly hit a new recovery high. And it's a new closing high. And it's finding support in the region of the trend mean. So this is at least a short-term recovery. I do think that it might be blasé to think that the dollar is going to surge on the upside, but we don't have any evidence yet that this recovery has ended. So we would have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. One thing that I thought was particularly interesting with Europe today is that over the course of the last 2 years, European indices have relied on a weak currency to rally, and now they are more reliant on a strong currency. Investors want to have the currency on their side before they invest in European equities. But certainly here also, the trend is on their side, and we have this sequence of higher reaction lows. We have a somewhat overbought condition, but it's a benign environment overall. And then when we think about the industrial resources, well, lead prices popped on the upside yesterday. When we think about aluminium, well, it was also up in a dynamic manner over the course of the last few sessions. And I think that this is particularly relevant considering that aluminium input costs are very closely tied to energy, and the price is now consolidating above the $2,500 level for the first time in nearly a decade. So it would be easy to think that it is really only copper has been pushing on to new high ground, and that it is leading on the way up, and that there's nothing else is doing well. But the reality is that the majority of industrial resources are doing well, and that steel prices continue to do well. Let me see if I can get the tin price up. And when we think about tin, well, it's been resurgent over the course of the last year, and the price has also doubled, and it's at new highs for the decade. So that's certainly supportive of the view that we are still in a benign environment, and that the global recovery is still in action. Now, obviously, when we think about how people are positioned, well, some people will definitely be looking at the industrial resources and looking at infrastructure bills being passed around the world and this money supply. But the other asset that does well when money is abundant is Bitcoin, and it was down $1,000 in here today. When we think about money supply growth and the trend overall, well, when money was extraordinarily abundant in 2020, it helped to inflate the price in a dynamic manner. Now that we're moving into a new phase where there's still money supply growth, but not on the scale of 2020, well, it might be high by historical standards, but compared to 2020, I don't think anything could be comparable. So that is putting downward pressure on Bitcoin. Now, it hasn't quite countermanded the 3 days on the upside, but it's going to have to do more than that and sustain a move above 40,000 and above the trend mean most particularly to confirm a return to demand dominance. Ethereum hit a rather significant landmark in here today, and it's had more transactions or more throughput on the network than Bitcoin for the first time. So that's an interesting development, and it's suggestive that there is perhaps some transition going on, but it's also very much dependent on the fact that interest in Bitcoin has deteriorated, and its less action in the market is delivering this victory for Ethereum rather than the strength of its individual market. But at least it is firming from the region of the trend mean, and as long as it's doing that, well, at least we can give the benefit of the doubt to some higher to lateral ranging. If it were to pull back below the 2000 level, then that would be a very material decline overall. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.